Welcome to the When Bearing Witness podcast. This podcast is an invitation to explore trauma-informed storytelling, a safe and healthy process of gathering and telling painful stories. It's hosted by me, Maria Bryan, a career storyteller. I have long believed that storytellers play a crucial role in making the world a better place. For a brief moment, I was introduced to the concept of trauma-informed storytelling, and it changed my life. Join my conversations with trauma-informed experts and social good storytellers as we help shape the intersection of trauma-informed care and the storytelling process. Stories are sacred, and we can create safe spaces to tell and share them. Hello, we have Cody Hayes in the house with us today. Cody is the CEO and founder of Marketing Mission, a digital marketing firm that provides marketing services to nonprofit orgs to help advance progressive social change. He serves as the executive editor of the Journal of Public Interest Communications, which I love. That publication. And if that's not enough, he's also pursuing a PhD in communications at Arizona State University. He's studying how to curb the climate misinformation polluting our digital ecosystems. Cody, I am so thrilled that you're here. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Maria. I'm super excited to be here.
So you are such a huge part of my journey as a trauma-informed storytelling trainer. So let's kind of like go down memory lane. This was the end of 2022, probably. And I don't know who asked the other person, but you might have asked me, do you know anything about trauma-informed marketing? And it was the same exact time that I had a student ask me that question. And we were both kind of in this panic of like, oh, this is a thing. So tell me a little bit about like when you started kind of thinking about trauma-informed marketing and storytelling and what kind of introduced you to that concept.
Absolutely. I think with a lot of folks, I also was in part of this 2020 awakening that realized, hold up, white people, we have some work to do. And so that was a big eye-opener for me. And this was also around the time when I was starting my business. And so I could kind of see the opportunity to support folks in an ethical way. The moment that really stood out to me was when I was working with a client and we had to kind of pause and take a deep breath because the topics that we were talking about were really heavy and really emotional. And as I was trying to learn about the organization and about the people that they serve, realize that, oh, hold up, there's something not quite right in the way that I'm approaching this, and it's making my clients feel uncomfortable. And so that was a like, oh, red flag, Cody's doing something that he shouldn't be or could be doing something better. And so that was when I came to you and was like, hey, Maria, this is what's happening. I have a client. I don't know if I can fully support them in the way that they need. What have you done? Who do you know? And that kind of got us into this rabbit hole of going and trying to learn about trauma-informed messaging, trauma-informed marketing, and then also just lead with empathy through everything that we're doing. And so I think that was the moment where I was like, Maria, help. We need some support over here.
It was such an interesting part of my journey into this because I would find something and send it to you and you would find something and send it to me. And we were very panicked. It was like, the story brand is like an ethical disaster, which I don't necessarily think is the case, but all of our kind of like pillars were being shaken. And I'm really grateful that you said, let's study this. Can we be accountable to each other? Can we study this together? And we actually formed a small cohort that took a FSU course on trauma and resilience. And we met, I think biweekly for a few months to work through that. I actually had Christy Kern on as an earlier guest who is also in that study group. And something that I said to Christy is
that study group was meant for us to integrate what we were learning into our roles, but really it ended up being therapy sessions because it unpacked a lot for us as we were learning about trauma. And so where are you today in this? Hasn't been that long. It's been about a year since we took that course. To catch us up, you're doing such exciting things right now.
Yeah. So after we took that course, we met as a team and kind of realized, hey, we can adjust our processes here. What we did is I was able to take a lot of the readings and research that we read in the course and then share those with my team. And then we sat down to actually change the way that we do copywriting at Marketing Mission. And so instead of focusing so heavily on problem, this is a challenge, and reminding folks that already know this challenge exists, that, hey, you have it, just for your 50th reminder today, here's another challenge you're facing. Realize that's not how we wanted to be in coaching folks and coaching organizations to be sharing their messaging. And so we shifted a little bit. And instead of focusing so heavily on the problem, we decided that we're actually going to focus on the aspirational goals and what is possible for these individuals. So yes, we can talk about a challenge, but we're not going to, you know, go on and on and on and on and on about it. It may just be we're throwing out a statistic and then we're showing a story that says, and this person was able to break that statistic and accomplish X, Y, Z, and ABC because of the support that they were able to get. So really, it shifted the way that we look at traditional storytelling. And instead of it going from like problem, solution, relief, it really started at like we kind of jump into the middle of their journey a little bit and say, oh, you already know the background because we're there already. And let's dive in and say, celebrate the successes and accomplishments of these folks that we're working with rather than the challenges that they face.
Yeah, I think that we are taught as storytellers to set the scene, and you're going to set the scene with something very painful and challenging because that's why we exist as nonprofits, to solve really big problems. I've really been struggling, Cody, because I will go down this path of we don't have to go into all the gory details of pain. Let's just jump into the transformation and celebration. And I've been challenged with but we can't pretend pain doesn't exist either. It's been such a tightrope for me on, let's not pretend it's all sunshine and rainbows because pain exists. But what's this balance? Like, how can we be clear that something painful happened without, I think at the end of the day, how can we do that without exploiting the story owner or making sure that the story owner feels good about sharing this, and also allowing the audiences to understand like this is what's coming. So I go back and forth. It's something that, again, we're both students of the story brand, and we've used story brand as kind of a guide for our consultancies, and really struggle with like having a deep understanding of people's pains and deep understanding of people's challenges. What I love about what you just said is like, can't we assume that people know? Like if someone says like, I grew up in an abusive home, like that's enough context, I think is what you're saying, right? Like we don't necessarily need to get into all the details. I don't know if you have any other thoughts, like, has it changed for you? Like, have you kind of ping ponged a little bit, or do you kind of just feel like, no, let's just stick to the transformation and celebration?
It definitely depends. Like there are organizations that talking about the challenge definitely makes sense. Like environmental organizations or science-based organizations, yeah, we're going to talk about the problem. And typically that's going to come through some sort of quantifiable statistic, like X amount of dollars are being wasted, or things that don't necessarily pertain to the individual's challenges. Yeah. But the larger like community or like city, state government challenges or like science related challenges, that's where we definitely use the problem statement. And we will go external, internal, philosophical, but we really always focus that philosophical on like, you deserve more or you deserve better as a member of this community, rather than focus so on like the negative Sarah McLachlan style pain challenge. And so there's definitely areas where we do bring in those challenges. But if I'm working with an organization that is focused on domestic violence, for example, I'm not going to bring up 1,000 statistics. That's just not really necessary in this case when sharing a story of success is so much more powerful than like reminding people and fear-mongering.
Yeah. And I think there's going to be some organizations and causes where you don't have to have a deep dive to understand the internal pain of domestic violence. But let's talk about the environmental sector. What is this internal challenge? Maybe it does, when you're so in the weeds, maybe it is worthwhile to say, oh, there is like anxiety there. There is shame there. There's fear there. So I think it is worthwhile to peel back layers when working with marketers on like, some of these issues are easy to articulate. And sometimes it does take a minute to say like, okay, let's talk about the person. But then you have to take the next step to say, okay, but when you're articulating this, can you flip it? And so instead of saying, you know, the goal of this campaign is to tap into people's fear and shame, but like, how can we make people feel equipped or empowered and like they can do action? I'm specifically thinking about the environmental sector, yeah, where I think people can get really paralyzed by the doom and gloom of it. And we do have choices. We have choices to say, you should be ashamed of yourself because of your, you know, your footprint, or, you know, because you don't recycle, or like, hey, this is real. This is happening. Here's the statistics. And if you're feeling scared, here's three things that you can do. And that might be like, not just turning off the light before, you know, leaving your house, but like showing up to this event, donating, like really actionable, bigger things, signing, you know, calling your elected official. So I'm actually about to teach a workshop on messaging, and I've deleted the internal pain and I put it back, and I've deleted it and put it back. And I don't know yet exactly how to responsibly teach people to like deep dive into people's pain.
Well, I'll give an example that I think might help you, and it's going to be specific to environmental again. But one of my clients is working pretty heavily on like a green infrastructure campaign, essentially saying that we should have more natural species like corals and mangroves to prevent things like storm surge and sea level rise that's eroding the coastlines. However, they live in a very developed, or city that is developing like as one of the fastest in the nation. And so how do you tell a group of like billionaires that, hey, you need to stop using so much concrete in your design because it's making the city ugly and it's not like actually going to solve the issues? Like, how do we work together on this? Rather than saying our city's filled with concrete, because like, boo, that's not a fun thing to say. They're going to be like, here. Obviously, that's right. What I do. And right. We use nostalgia. Mm-hmm. So we think about, okay, what does someone in their 40s, 50s, 60s kind of thinking about remembering? They're probably remembering the good old days of Miami or the city. I just added them, but good old days of the city. And how can we use that as an internal challenge? So I'm not in the messaging guide. We don't even say like, remember what Miami used to look like. It's right. Like putting up a picture of the beach in the 80s and comparing it to what that coastline looks like now. Mm-hmm. So they can see the before and after without us having to actually say anything. And then we can skip that internal challenge for, say, verbally, but they can interpret that through the image. And then we go straight into solution of like, want Miami to embrace more green.
Right.
Question mark. Here is what you can do. So we don't even mention that challenge, but using it visually, knowing what that challenge is helpful, like you were saying. Right. We don't always have to share that challenge. And that's what I think people, what I've had to also teach folks and teach my team also is like, just because we're writing this doesn't mean that we need to use this section of the brand script every single time. We may save this one for special occasions.
And I think that's really it right there. It's like, let's have these conversations about the realities, but then train marketers, communicators, fundraisers, everyone's a communicator really. Okay, this is precious knowledge. Now we know people's pain points. Let's flip them, or let's be careful and thoughtful on how we use that knowledge, which is actually a really big deal, because we were taught like that was the gold mine, is understanding people's pain. And so taking the time to think, oh, let's tap into nostalgia, or let's tap into the future, these hopeful things, these positive things, takes work. It takes a little bit of extra time. But I have a feeling it's a bigger payoff though when people are having positive associations with your messaging.
Yeah, we can definitely see it when, you know, we're sharing content and the post that has the nostalgia or has that extra layer of strategy is performing, you know, 5-10 times better. And that is a very good indicator of, yes, this messaging is resonating.
Right.
This episode was made possible by DonorBox. Let's be honest. Social impact storytelling and fundraising is hard. DonorBox is in your corner to simplify fundraising for you and giving back for your donors. Transform your fundraising strategy effortlessly with DonorBox, the online fundraising platform that streamlines your process, elevates your donations, and ensures a user-friendly experience for your supporters. Create captivating donation forms, accept digital wallet payments, seamlessly track donations, and automate receipts. Joining is a breeze, with no setup or monthly fees and no contracts required. Explore the world of simplified, seamless fundraising at DonorBox.org today. DonorBox, helping you help others.
And I think that something that I've really appreciated about the work you do within your team, but also externally, is really underscoring how important language is and how language matters. And we've worked on a language guide together that we share with students and folks that we work with. Why is that so important for storytellers to be cognizant and thoughtful about the language they use, not just talking about negative, like whatever it is, especially when how we name the people we serve and how we name our supporters. Can you speak a little bit to like what that means to you and why that's important for our sector?
Yeah, you know, and this is technically like the second spoiler. We started recording, had to stop recording. So this is the second time I'm saying this, but I have a completely new story for you this time, Maria. The TikTok was talking about queer folks and how the campaign in the early 2000s was very much, it's okay to be gay. You're not gay, but it's okay to be gay. And it's there, let them be gay. They're fine over there being gay. And so what are we seeing now? We're seeing folks saying, they're over there.
Right.
I'm over here.
Right.
And so I don't want them, the gay people, in my space. And mm-hmm. I was like, that makes sense. We kind of, the way in which the queer movement in the 2000s happened with celebrity culture and all of that, kind of pouring into support, also caused a wedge in society, which I think is what we're seeing now with Don't Say Gay bills and all this. Like it's the exact opposite of Hillary Duff going up on the commercial and being like, excuse me, you shouldn't say gay and that's rude. And complete opposite, or don't say gay as like a derogatory term.
Right.
They're like,
Right. Right.
let's use it.
Yeah.
Let's not say it or whatever. So I think very much in that sense, the moral of that lovely TikTok was like the campaign and messaging that we're working on now has impact. And so we have to take that extra time to massage it, to test it, to get that message in front of the people that we're serving before we release it to the whole world. Because if you're working with organizations that are working on a local level, that's impacting your community. If you're working with folks on a state level, that's not impacting your entire state. Global, like you're literally impacting millions of people. And so whatever we do as communicators has a huge, huge impact.
Yeah, it has such a ripple effect. Makes me think of when I was working at a health center and I created a campaign for Men's Health Month where you have to man up and get your checkup. Folks did not like that. I did not ask anybody what they thought or if this is something that might have consequences. And after the fact, I had some program staff saying, like, no, we actually don't use like language like that. As trendy as it sounds, there's like
And that's,
consequences to that. Like,
yes.
yeah.
And that's why having that word bank that we developed is so important. Like,
Right.
if whenever I talk to executive directors or development directors that are like hiring for the first time or bringing on new people, I'm like, you need to have some sort of word bank for them or some sort of messaging guide because they are new here. They don't know that you don't say XYZ and you say this instead. Because that's lived inside your head for the last like 5 years, and they don't have access to your brain. And so we have to like codify that. And I encourage folks like write it down. Say we say X instead of Y because.
So it's meaningful. It's really meaningful how we talk about immigrants. It's meaningful how we talk about those who are deeply exploited, how we can unintentionally victimize folks. It changes so much. You know, it's like okay to call a community underserved, and then it's not okay. And so getting back to why it's important to explain the why, because the why will stay the same, likely, but maybe the words will change a little bit. And Big Duck, I don't know if you're familiar with Big Duck, it's a New York communications agency. And every year they come out in January with the words not to use this year. And it's always devastating to me because it's always words that like I use. And it's kind of things like pivot and you know, like things that you're like, no, we overused that last year. We're not going to use it again this year. But they're going a little bit deeper, I think, into more ethically how language matters. And I think that, you know, something that I tell folks is, you know, if you're a grant writer and there's certain language that's like part of the grant, that's one thing. So maybe even have guidance on like, we will talk use maybe you'll use the word homeless in a grant if that's the words they're using, but just know that like this is not external. Like externally we talk about these folks as being unhoused. And so we set that guidance.
Ooh, I'm adding that to our word bank, like internal, external. I'm gonna add a column for that.
And I did a retreat for an organization in Oregon recently. And there's folks that have been there for decades, and they are, have just gotten so used to talking about folks being homeless or substance users. It's hard to keep up with it. And so I guess I say this with empathy, with empathy and kindness, that let's feel an urgency around it, but I also feel empathy that we can not just be thoughtful about the words we use, but exactly what you're doing, Cody. Let's write it down. Let's get it on paper. Let's make this process.
And I think the beauty of it too is that we are all in a different stage of our journey. And so, yes, this company may be bold and have their words on their website. Maybe you're not ready for that. Maybe you need to do that internal work
Right.
first with yourself, your team, and that external facing stances comes in a year or two. That's okay. Everybody can go on this journey in our own path.
Absolutely. Okay, I have a question for you that I don't necessarily have the answer to. So you don't have to have an answer for it either. You're coming into an organization, how painful it can be to work for an organization you love and a cause that you love, but your organization's maybe not ready to take those trauma-informed steps or those ethical storytelling marketing steps. And let's go back to language. Like, no, we use the word homeless. We're not going to change it to unhoused. Or we use the word prostitute because we've always used the word prostitute. What would you say to someone who is in that situation where they feel this strong responsibility to do marketing ethically and trauma-informed, but don't necessarily have the support of their leadership?
Yeah. So the thing, putting my like educator hat on, if I know that I don't have buy-in from every person in the room, AKA like some people don't want to be there, some people are like, what's the point? Start with some sort of unifying activity. And so since you mentioned like Gen Z and maybe some folks in like Gen X or boomers, I would literally start with an activity where we compare slang and we ask for everyone to write down, you know, 5 slang words from their generation. And then we put them up on the board and opposite generations have to like define what it is. And then and we can like have that conversation, like young folks will be giggling, old folks will be giggling when you can't figure it out. And then we start to put up other words on the board, like houselessness or homelessness, and like use the generational differences to your advantage to then say, it's fun, it's silly, like we just, these are the, this is lit, this is, you know, put your elbow into it, and whatever it is, like those kind of things make us laugh because we're humans and we like to connect with each other. But I think after you can laugh with somebody, you can then like have a more serious conversation with somebody. And so I think using some sort of activity to then transition into the conversation or the topic, even if it is, hey, let's just look at 5 words, or even if it is, hey, we have this activity and maybe you should think about, our homework for today is to think about 10 words that we use that maybe we should reconsider. Let's reconnect at the next team meeting and share our words together.
I cannot love that more. I have goosebumps. Like, I can't wait to use that exercise for so many reasons, because it is so human and it shows how words change, but it doesn't necessarily make it I'm right, you're wrong, which is how these can feel. It's more like, oh, but we perceive it different because we have this different life experience and you perceive it different. So like, how is our audience perceiving it? It's kind of like taking out the nonprofit and kind of making it more outward facing and how folks feel about those words. What a great way to bring in laughter and lightness and then to bring in like a deeper topic.
Yeah, that has all credit goes to my grandma, because she did that one year for Christmas when all of grandkids and kids were here. And she was like, everybody write down like things that you say, and we put them into a hat and just kind of like pulled it. And we were like, what is this? And the people would have to guess. So it's all credit goes to grandma.
Grandma, thank you. I love that. I love that. I will give credit to grandma when I use that in my workshop next week.
Love it.
Oh, goodness. Okay, Cody, you are doing so many things. You are getting your PhD. I want you to talk about that. You are the founder of a very fast growing marketing agency that serves nonprofits. You working with the Journal of Public Interest. So tell us about all the things that you're working on right now.
Oh my goodness. What a list. And I'll give a quick handy recap of what I do and who for. So I work in nonprofit marketing, and I'm most known for maximizing nonprofits marketing and streamlining their time. So I typically work with nonprofit executive directors, fundraisers, founders that are typically overworked and overwhelmed by marketing. Typically, they're at a pretty pivotal turning point in their organization, maybe trying to scale up to like a $500,000 organization, or scale from like a 6-figure to a 7-figure organization. And so what we typically do is work on a maximized marketing intensive. So in just 2 weeks, we come together to create whatever assets they need to streamline their marketing campaigns. And so we work with folks and throughout the year, also throughout, you know, these 2 week intensives to really just come alongside organizations and be that extra set of hands to take responsibilities off of executive director and fundraisers' plates. So that way they can work on those one-on-one connections, growing the organization and bringing in those major donors while we're handling the communications, design, and visual side of things. And so we work with organizations that focus primarily on environmental and economic justice, as well as education. And so stay pretty busy with those. And we're full suite over here, so we can do anything from like web to social to email and to messaging to like systems and operations, which is really where I thrive. And so in addition to all of this, I am also getting my PhD. I start my second semester next week. And so by the time you're listening to this, I am full deep into it. And drowning, yes. I'm taking like a class on the First Amendment, which I'm super excited for, because like every excuse that I get is like, this is free speech. And I'm like, so excited to tell you that it's not. And actually be able to like know the First Amendment and like actually understand what it is. And so different things like that. I'm researching specifically environmental misinformation, specifically around how typically white supremacy has integrated itself into the environmental space and what we can do to shed light on the communication strategies that are actually being used to do harm. So that way we can come up with a reverse pivot and Uno reverse on that and hopefully keep folks from spreading climate misinformation. And it's a big challenge. I am just beginning, but we will get there eventually, hopefully.
I'm really excited to follow that research as you're rolling that out. And then you work for the journal.
Yes.
You want to talk about a little bit about
that? Yeah. So I also serve as the editor for the Journal of Public Interest Communications. Maria, I know you know that organization very well since we interviewed you for it and you have a piece up on the journal website. That should definitely make it its way into the show notes because it is worth the read. I give it out to folks all the time. And the Journal of Public Interest Communications specifically is an open access journal. So it's free to folks who are submitting and to folks who are reading. So typically to submit a article or a piece into a journal, it can cost thousands, if not tens of thousands of dollars for people like you, people like me who don't necessarily have, even I have university backing, but they don't pay for it. Like it's a lot of money. And so typically we don't see folks, like we don't see women, we don't see queer folks, we don't see Black folks publishing as much because of that economic barrier. And so JPIC and make sure that it's open access for both the submitter and the reader. So that way we can truly create a generation of public interest communicators that are influencing influencing policy for the positive.
Right. Cody, you are such a force. You are so thoughtful on how we can do things better, more ethically, and challenging the status quo, digging deep. I love every single conversation that we have. Thank you so much for your time and for hanging out with me on the show.
Thank you so much, Maria. I really, really appreciate it. And I'm excited to listen to the rest of the series.
Thank you for joining us on this episode of When Bearing Witness. This podcast was produced by our friends at Rustic Roots. They are video storytellers passionate about sharing the impact of nonprofits. From story ideation to beautiful and powerful videos on screen, they've got you covered. get in touch over at rusticroots.co. If you enjoyed this episode and you'd like to help support the podcast, please do subscribe and leave a rating and review. And remember, your role as a storyteller is making the world a healthier, safer, cleaner, and happier place. Thank you for bearing witness. Until next time.